we enter into these new chapters. So just a few announcements. My schedule is changing every few days. Looks like some other consideration is there. The conference I wanted to attend in Germany is an international social development conference. That's maybe GDC now. To try to look at some significant points about the social fabrics of the movement worldwide. And I'm asked to be a key player in that. So I'm trying to address things around that program, as well as around making at least a short visit to Africa, and then being able to come back for the World Atonement Day. It seems like in order to do that, I need to leave a little earlier. The Germany conference was supposedly the first week of October, but now it's going to be September 22nd and 24th. So based on that, I have to leave about the 25th or 26th of this month, and then I'll be returning somewhere around the 26th or 27th. Can all the bodhisattvas upstairs, can they come down? Can you tell anybody that engaged up there to come down? Those who are, they can speed up as you come down.
Excuse me, you'll be returning, right?
I'll be returning somewhere like around the 20th.
September.
Probably 26th. For a better answer. A couple of days will not have a better idea. But it looks like I'm leaving on the 20th. What did I say? I'm leaving on the
25th.
Right. Leaving on the 25th and returning on the 26th. And during that time, I'll go to South Africa first. And then Botswana for a few days. Then to Germany. Maybe a day or two in England. And then I'll be coming back. Does Madhava work today?
I guess they're coming. He just didn't be up here for a moment.
Okay, because he needs to hear what I'm going to say. Roy, can you tell Madhava to come down?
Sure.
If it's Kunti, they'll be up there later. And if Kunti is not working, she should come down also.
She's gone?
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. And, when I come back, then I'll be staying a short time, a month, 2 months at the most, well, a month and a half. And from that, I have to go to West Africa. And then after West Africa, then most likely I won't come back here. I'll go to India. And from India, then I'll come back. Then I'll be here for some time because we get very, very high gear. There's a few other announcements. So, Mother, he's older now. With graduate, he should begin to know that when you're busy, that he should honor that. And the only way you can wean him off of it is you just have to not respond and talk to him. But he knows. Even now, especially if he has a little brother, he should be more of a bigger brother. And that he's still acting too much like a baby at his age now. Especially when you're doing spiritual things, people have an understanding. This way he himself begins to honor spiritual things, you know. He's dealing with the deities, he's dealing with Guru Puja. You're on the altar. So he's intelligent enough to understand this. Also, some of you discussed at the community building, we're looking at that this change is taking place. How to solidify everything stronger. So it means how we make the project much more firm. And one idea, of course, is we're looking now at some facility in town so that people can come during the week and then later they can come out here during the weekend so that there'll be something more accessible. And I think some of you are investigating now Martin Luther King Library. We're looking at some other facility. So we should get some, whoever's doing it should give us some report back. In the next week. I want to try to get as much things done before I leave as soon as possible. So consider, you know, 8, 9, 10 days or so and then I'm gone. Mother Johnny, I gave you the tape, so it's a short one. We'll see if we can have that summary report ready by the time I leave. I'll be taking several days down to South Africa. I'll be doing initiations all over South Africa. And we're going to start a tape ministry there, so I'm taking one of each of the tapes. And in the future, there'll be a lot of more interaction. A lot of very astute, rather competent professional devotees who we're making in South Africa. I think now with less visa complications, some of them will be able to move in and out. So I'd like some of you to visit there sometimes and some of them to also to be able to visit here. And I may even bring back one of my devotees who was a pharmacist to come and to stay with us for some time. I'm asking one of my devotees who's in India, who's a lawyer, to go. I just wrote him yesterday about going to South Africa. And we must see that each thing gets stronger, and not that one thing, you know, minimizes another or takes away. Just as we're trying to put more energy into Gitanagari, and later a little more into the New Vrindavan, and so many things are waiting still on hold about Detroit. But each project should grow in such a way that it grows and other things also grow. So we ask several devotees here to come to take more responsibilities. Mother Nandini, I've asked her to act as the promotions director for the books, the preaching that's connected with that. And for Kubera and her to participate more in helping to play their role in helping with the management. So when Jagannath goes to Gitanagari, then there'll be a need for another person to fill the spot on board. And so I've asked if she would consider. The situation seems a little ideal. She doesn't have a job. Krishna's given us some special arrangement. And we have more time than most of you to be able to assist. And because she also has meticulous mind to help in that way. And I've asked that she would work with for the overseeing and help with the glue for the interactions that's going on with the book team. That's going to be, you know, for promotions and distribution and whatnot. But that she would act as a coordinator to see that different devotees are sensitive to what each other is doing and to remind devotees about their services and what necessary to jump right in and to do as well. And I would like Ms. Mandara to get more involved again with the counseling group and some other things I'll mention in a short while. And I would like Sigruta to take more responsibility with the tapes and some other you'll be talking to at a later time. And I've also asked Damavati not to go to Gitanagari at this time, but to stay here to help with daily services. And also now I have so much stuff that I have to do in terms of letters and correspondence and things that are going to be connected with the book as well as so much other GBC activities. So that's there. And I particularly want devotees like Leela and Mandara, Jagannath Chintamani, and several others of you to particularly get involved in some things I'm going to mention at this time about the workshops. But then Drani is very natural for these things, and her workshop will be very, I think, apropos to be able to do some of the things that I'll be talking about. First, I wanted to share some things that's happening. I just got some letters, I just saw the table just a little while ago. One of them is from one of the ladies who did meditation seminar. He sent me a copy of it and sent to Nandini also. He just writes a nice little letter. Just a note to tell you how pleased I was to be a part of the International Holistic Health and Psychic Fair. This is from Divya. She has a meditation program. And her workshop was packed. This was my first vending experience at a holistic fair. I'm glad it was with IFAS. I hope it will be a yearly event. If so, please invite me again. From the moment I arrived and was greeted by staff offering to help me, bringing my wares to the continuous stroking, at the end thanking me for my cooperation for breaking down at the appropriate time, to having staff drive me back to my hotel, where she's thanking the devotees for inviting her, for helping her to come in, helping her to set up, helping her to break down, and then someone even drove her back to the hotel. I was just overwhelmed with gratitude and appreciation for such a beautiful demonstration of Karma Yoga. I was very impressed with the overall organization of the fair. Did this letter, have you gotten it, Jim?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My workshop and introduction to clarify, her workshop was about clarifying your life's purpose, was well received. The room was packed. I have no idea how many seats were set up in the room, room 104, but I do know that there were only 2 vacant seats, and she puts exclamation mark. I give thanks. I thought you'd like to know I had a drawing at my table. The prize was my debut Serenity Shaw. The winner was Virginia Davis, something such as, wishing you peace and love. And she writes me a note, Swami, it was a pleasure to see you again after so many years. I'm looking forward to reading the book I purchased. I'll be in touch soon. Namaste. The service of the highest guru. Now she does workshops herself on a regular basis. And she has actually quite a large following of people who take a meditation course. And she just packed a simple arrangement, just describing her course, a brochure, and people are coming to it. It seems like she's in the Washington area now.
No,
she's out of Washington?
No, she's in New York.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see, traveling instructions. I see. From Washington. Okay, she's in New York. Her course, her course is $85. Simple, meditation course. And she has a little bio data about herself. Simple. And I got another letter that was up here this morning from a devotee in California, where I assume I got one of the books when Subal was there distributing the books at the Radha Yatra. This is a devotee who's been going through a lot of difficulties. Been away from the movement for about 5-6 years. And seeing me from getting the book, he's become inspired. He's writing me about some assistance in his spiritual life. He wants to get back involved in Krishna consciousness. But I had a letter this morning also from Minister Farrakhan. And he's just mentioning that thanking our attendants. Kendra went there for the organizational meeting. And I just mentioned that due to so many other things that need to be covered before the October meeting at the UN, that they would like to reschedule a second meeting on the 19th at 11 o'clock. So the date is the 16th, 17th?
17th.
Not that much time, so many days. But I'm probably Kendra to see if it's possible for him to be able to go back. And I have some reports that they start reading the book right away, the leadership book, that Dr. Ben Chavis and Farrakhan both have read the book and shared the book. We only gave them one book, so that means that they're reading pretty fast. They took it very serious for themselves. Now let's see if they can use it in a way with their people. Other things I wanted to mention is that as I'm talking about the acceleration, can help you understand why. Maybe my preface first is I'm going to mention something about the psychic, about the spiritual warrior book, and then about the leadership book. These things are in no way happening by any accident. The timing, there's so much help involved in what we're doing. And it'll manifest more as we step up, and we'll see. Then the help will meet us, so to speak. Just like I said, when I wrote that leadership book, I was not in any mindset of writing a leadership book. I was just writing some small submissions based on things that was happening in the environment. And when I finished it, the topics of leadership were nowhere as popular and dominant as they are now, as they've come within the last year. And you'll see from some of the things that I'm going to show you. Now, these Spiritual Warrior book, of course, was some of the lectures we were giving in Howard. And the fact that the devotees put this particular book on psychic things is first with some inner help that was going on beyond their understanding. The investigation of the paranormal has become so much commonplace now. You mentioned about the TV series, you know, there are sightings, there's a whole program coming up in the next series about, you know, UFOs, extraterrestrials, et cetera, et cetera. This month's Playboy, and the center page, not center page, but in two pages, I guess next to the center page, is a picture of an alien. And the editor is being very strong. They're trying to, you know, trying to ridicule him on national TV. But he is saying how this is a picture of one of the four aliens that was found in the wreckage in the late 1940s.
I mean,
in Texas. Is it Mexico or Texas? Texas. Yes, New Mexico. So, I mean, here you got, you know, Playboy is very popular. And even though they have all of this nonsense stuff, central stuff, they have very good writers because they're, you know, they're wealthy, you know, they're rich, you know, it's a powerful magazine, yeah, powerful writers. And they have some pretty powerful articles I've heard. I don't read the magazine. Never had a copy of it. But I keep it weird. So I saw this just 3 days ago on TV, you know. So I saw him defending, and they showed a picture. And they were trying to find ways to minimize. But this gives me some idea of just how much this issue is there. Juggernaut has given me the last couple of issues of the final call. Last two issues have so much stuff about extraterrestrials, you know, about the mothership. It's just on so many people's minds. Last week on Nightline, top scientists from Stanford, along, and in the last week there's been discussions coming right from the president talking about this, Clinton himself. They have proof now that there is life on other planets, that they've studied the rocks, what do you call it, meters, rocks that they've looked at, and they have found in recent investigation that by looking at the bacteria arrangements, I don't know all the scientific ways to explain it, but what they have found is that there is life on Mars. Now, in the Nightline thing, they were trying to deal with this, about what does this mean for us? What is this going to mean for the public? How we deal with this now? That there is proven fact that there's life in most of the universes. And not to say that, you know, 2 years ago, the top psychiatrist at Harvard, one of the leaders in Harvard, the medical school or something, he has put this powerful book together concerning abductions, you know, John Mack. So you get all these people with, you know, established positions, scientists and academicians of very high astute, along with people constantly having more sightings, more experiences. So something's about to break. Just like we understand, if people can accept the fact that they're not these bodies, their entire consciousness then shifts, because now they have to look at reality totally different. And so always in our preaching, we try to get people to realize about life after death, you're not the bodies. Then they can begin to evaluate things totally different. Another factor that completely changes people's understanding of themselves, the conception of reality, is the idea of recognition that there is life on other planets. And what comes along with that, later when people are exposed to that life, then there's very few things that will create such a traumatic shift in the way people understand things. So we're on the dawning of such about to happen. And so therefore, people who in the past would shun psychic, metaphysical kind of things will be very astute now in trying to understand it. Because one, they'll see that it's not just, you know, mythology, it's not just mysticism. Is this not just occultism, something that's impractical? But they'll begin to see that it's higher science. You know, just some few years back, people talking about these extraterrestrial things were looked at as weirdos. I mean, they weren't considered in orthodox circles. And now you're having top behavioristic scientists dealing completely with the reductionistic and empiricist way of looking at things, saying that there is distinctly life in this way. It'll probably come out in the next Newsweek or Time magazine, probably the front page. These issues will be addressed. So what we're saying, though, we're giving that to let you know how much unusual things, deeper spiritual things, paranormal things, are important at this time for us to grab hold to and to see how to help people spiritually to move with them, etc. So, you know, no better time than now for such. So therefore, that goes in line with the spiritual warrior, you know, and the psychic book, to be able to just... But when I did those the radio programs, there were call-ins now, you know, about extraterrestrials. And there were call-ins where people were just asking these questions like as a matter of fact and wanting to know. And nobody later, the host or people, other people calling, let's say ridiculing, you know, such callers. But more so people also, you know, they actually want to know. I remember just 12 years ago, I was doing programs like that, did one or two programs like that in Cleveland. And I had wonderful audience reciprocation. As soon as I make sense of extraterrestrials, I got a stream of people calling in, Swami, I mean, you know, you really touched their heart, we really like what you were saying. But I mean, this UFO stuff, Swami, I mean, come on. I mean, it was like intense. He's educating people, and they couldn't follow through with it. But now, we see constant, you know, there's something coming on almost every week, something to do with the idea of the paranormal or such. You know, unsolved, mysteries, sighting, this thing, that thing. And then this independence program that people saw, the amount of people that came out to see it, this shows the intensity of interest, you know, that people have. It's like broken records. Mm-hmm. And here it is about the planet being taken over by extraterrestrials. So how much this is on people's mind? So we should know that there will be times in the future when it won't anyway be a matter of just speculation or interpolation or scientific interpretation. But there will be a time when people will vividly know about, and some people will see extraterrestrials. And I mean, there's a few sightings. I mean that the Earth planet will be aware that there's beings here and will have to deal with that. And it's not going to be very long. Already, you know, government knows. Other governments, international governments know. But it's a matter of being so clear that nobody has to speculate about, you know, about the situation. This is why some of these things are coming out, because some of these things are being put out by the demons, some things by the spiritualists, so that people can be sensitive, so that when there's clear knowledge, it won't be such, you know, such a shake-up. And your work has a lot to do with all of these things. Now, the one thing we want to really tune into, and you may see we're doing it premature, but not really, because the only way things happen is to get them to start happening. And once you start something, you realize it's not as difficult as you may think. Just as from the psychic fair, how nice it was that so many of you, you know, gave workshops. And when you look at workshops and some of the areas that people are giving them in, it's just phenomenal. I mean, people are giving workshops in anything. And people are paying by droves, and people coming, you know, like anything, you know, just to find out something because they're hungry. And I want to show you, you know, some examples. But first, let me show you these first. I got a lot of things, you know, sent to me, so I keep aware. And some things just Krishna just arranges that they come. Now here's something that came also about 3 days ago. This is from what's called the Common Boundary. And a lot of these things are right here in Maryland or in, let's see, Washington. These guys are in Bethesda. Now, they're putting together, here's a recent conference that they're having, they're putting on. And so, the keynote speaker is a lady who just written, Margaret Wheatley, who just written a book on leadership. On the new science of management. And basically, she's using a little bit about from physics, metaphysics, to basically tell people that you can't just manage only in a mechanical way, but you got to be sensitive to to the subtleties. And her book is, you know, is a top seller. In fact, I have it here.
You're shipping the new science.
Yeah. And I don't put down these people, but what they're writing is not actually very, you know, very impressive. So she writes this: leadership and the new science, learning about organizations from an orderly universe. So she's looking at some things in relationship to points of karma. This is very heavy, you know, behaviorist, but from looking at physics, see, some of the hardcore scientists are becoming more metaphysical than some of those in the humanities, because they're going through the avenue of biology, of physics, and they're beginning to see how things are breaking down, you know, to wave principle, to spirit, to energy. And so she was a former professor at Brigham Young, just like with this guy Steve Covey. These are people who have some spiritual connection, some spiritual basis. And because of that spiritual basis, the material thing is having power. So for the Mormon philosophy, then she has some basic mode of goodness ideas, and those things, you know, those things are coming out. Now, this book has, you know, got reviews from, you know, all kind of top, you know, CEOs and so much. And then in the back of the book here, some of you saw some of these things at the community building. So this is a new thing that's happening with the books, and then there's some thing where you can buy audio, video, or you can, you know, you can sign up for a workshop, for a seminar or something. Now here, she has the book, and then she has tapes and things about the principles. And now she has see what she calls here, the Unforgettable Training video is now available. And how much do you think is available for? $775. You know, for half an hour video, talking a little bit about the book, and it's for $775. It's not even that long. It's 22 minutes. An aspiring, absorbing, astonishing, beautiful 20-minute video for $775. And they're getting people, you know, it's like anything. And the fact of that, she wrote the book, she's got this thing going on, now she's being called, you know, as keynote speaker at different places, etc. This guy who writes Community, I wish I could get his name.
Scott Peck.
Yeah, Scott Peck. He's one of the most amazing. So he's written this book, he's written some things about Community, some basic things, and he has people, he's not a part of any community. He's the expert, you know, on communities, that live in a community, hasn't lived in a community, but he's writing about such. He has staff of people, and they conduct these workshops, you know, 2-3-day intensives. And basically the workshops, the facilitators say very little. They facilitate the people just talking. They don't commit to anything. They don't direct them in any way. They let them talk. People share. But the thing is, they agree that they don't go anywhere other than, you know, the meetings, and then break, and they come back. And they go, they do this thing, I think, was for 8 hours or something. And the idea is like it's therapy. That they're talking and talking, and it is a community that first there is superficial community. The people just talk at each other. And then after 8 to 12 hours or so, then it turns into people really talking about the central things that they're concerned about. And then it turns into people, you know, having breakthroughs, you know, crying and shedding this and this and this and that. Which will happen in an environment where people are there having to deal with each other, having to talk about something, something's going to come about. And these people, you know, make thousands of dollars by just being there, letting people talk their stuff, have somebody they can talk out with, and then there is, you know, sharing, and they spill over stuff, and everybody goes home. So, I mean, you know, I'm not exaggerating. This is almost exactly what happens. And you pay a huge amount of money. But there's a bonding to take place also. When you're with people, hour after hour after hour, and the thing is, everybody just spill out whatever's there. And then, you know, so then the idea is that after that spilling, then people form a bonding and friendship, and that's community. Okay. And they have other things, but they send people out to give workshops and lectures. But basically, this is like the essential thing, is that people just come and they just speak and they talk and they go one by one, they share, and nobody is, you know, judgmental, nobody, you know, directs. So if it gets a little too funky, then the speaker has to bring them back to discuss, you know, without offense. And they get paid, you know, full-time jobs and such. Here, there's another example. I'll just pass some of these around. And Jagannath showed this one. Now, this is a leadership book called Stewardship. And again, all these, you know, nice reviews from very respectable people. And he has something similar in the back. And it says here distinctly, it says, Stewardism, Empowerment, Consulting Skills. Peter Block wrote the book. We offer the workshops. And then it has the learning workshops, the Empowered Manager, Making Empowerment Work, Leadership in Transition, Managing Promotion, the Quality Training Program. And so what they've done is just taken two basic points from here, and they put it into some type of course, some type of workshop. And I think this one is like $1,000 or something, you know, for 2 days. Before I go back to that, I just want to give you some idea of some of these conferences and workshops. Because what I want us to do is three things. One, I want some of you, as time permits, and you have to kind of make some time in some cases, how do all these things at the same time, Krishna arranged, no matter how we use our time, is many of these times, these kind of workshops and conferences, some of them are academic, and they want papers. And different people can submit paper. You can be a part of it. Others, you contact the coordinating committee and you offer what you have and you can be a participant. Now, because many of these things, you know, they happen and there are people who go from one to the next, and it also creates a kind of a grouping amongst its own. You'll find out time and time again you see some of the same people appearing. So we would like to infiltrate some of these circles. That once you get in, you know, after a couple of workshops, then what happens is that they start calling you, because you become a part of that scene, you know? It's like any of these I pick up, I see, okay, I know Ram Dass is going to be there, I know Munshi Deepak Chopra, Munshi Chopra, you know, certain people that, you know, in any major workshop is going to be like that. I'm looking, I'll find. And so these people will be given their stuff, and if you take something, it doesn't matter what it is, and if you kind of, you know, train yourself up in it, and you'll gradually get better and better. I mean, you can give a workshop on, you know, how to clean dishes nicely. And you can think about it scientifically, or you think about it, and you can get some idea, and you can get some people to come, and you can get better and better in being able to give it. I mean, it's just a matter of having some area that you become a little sensitive to, but you'll be having the philosophy, Krishna conscious philosophy, to be able to find a way to get that through by the topics that you use. Now this is one I just got a couple of days ago. Let me just read a few of these off to you. And these guys, yeah, these are the guys from Bethesda, Maryland. And this common boundary explores psychological spirituality. So, now this workshop, these are some of the kind of topics. Spiritual Roots of Compassion, that's by Ram Dass. The Voice of Spirit. That's by an African guy from West Africa. An Evening with Sweet Honey and the Rock. So you know them. They're going to do an entertainment. And then there is a Sabbath Service by a Lucy Rabbi. And then there is... let me just read the conference list. So, instead of all the people. Things about philosophy, the new millennium, health issues. Things about family, meditation. There was an actual list here. To show you how, you know, people just become an expert in something, or something they want to share, and there's somebody out there who wants to hear it, not only wants to hear it, you know, but is ready to pay for it. And some of these people, that you know, their whole life is just going from one conference or one workshop to the next, where they speak and they get paid. Now, for us, the economic side is important, but also the side of being able to constantly reach so many people, because you, as well as some of the leaders of these things, that we can be able to make contact with. Ms. Shanti Gaon, you always see her also giving something on healing ourselves and changing the world. The practice of writing in daily life. Creative Inventions by an African-American girl. And it's like this one is very variegated. You see a lot of women giving, a lot of men giving, you know, people of different traditions, of different races, different orientations. And it's huge. Discerning the spirit, opening the heart. Feminist ethics. Working with dying. To community building. Feng Shui. Anyway, I'll pass it. I was trying to see page where they were listing these things. Maybe I went to once. Altruism. Anyway, I'll just pass it around. You can. You can get an idea of that. And then there's another one you pass around. This is the ARE, Edgar Casey's group. They're a little more structured and a little more leaders. But they've been some of the leaders when these kind of things were looked down, you know, by most. And so they're always having workshops and conferences. And that's a charge. Rather expensive. This one is, I think, on hypnotherapy. These all these things I just got this in the last, you know, last couple of days. I'm getting to so many different things, but this is on my mind, so I'm not sure. Then here's a popular New Age magazine. And again, you know, conference on body and soul. And one is in Boston, one is in later in Washington. You see, you know, the same people, you know, Deepak Chopra and Ram Dass and such and such and such. And so here, you know, it gives different days where the places the conference will be, different country. I mean, different states. In Baltimore. I guess this one is all in Baltimore. Yeah, Baltimore, Maryland, September 20th, 21st, 22nd. Some of these we should just, some of you should just try to go and just see, get a better idea of what's going on. And then later, we should see how to connect with the steering committees and be able to be a part of such. And then later, we will find ways. See, you're planting seeds now. The way the books are going out, first we have to send books to people who've already paid, and then we're getting the books in the bookshops. This next couple of days, we'll be getting books out of some of the reviewers. And so after a while, we'll have built up connections with people who are interested. And our next step then is that we form our own staff from people who are interested in the book, that we can go and give them, you know, give them a workshop, you know, based on various things. And we can hold a workshop, we can hold a conference, and be able to invite people to come. Those who haven't had a chance yet, you know, try to read the leadership book yourself. Work through it very, very, you know, very slowly. Because each chapter is such that you can give workshops on each chapter. And it's just to get you going. You know, the idea is to use that as a catalyst, but then you'll be able to get creative ideas based on what you're comfortable with to, you know, to help and to share. And the other thing is that the people that come to these things are very good audience, because they're interested in things and they're hungry. So it's not like we just hold a program in an auditorium, we go someplace, and a lot of people come, we're just curious, or we just try to get people to become, you know, become interested. But these are people who are sensitive to these areas, and they're interested. And now when we're bringing in some of the transcendental aspects, they're those who have heard so much before, and they're waiting now for, you know, for that connection. We can have chance, you know, we can be a part of being able to help them in this way. You mentioned that there's a few of it that encompasses in this one here. And see, these, you know, the people who become very active on these things, they have a chance to express a lot of their ideas, and it's become very economically strong, you know, for them also. I mean, this is why this guy, Deepak Chopra, you know, he was a medical doctor, he was, you know, big manager of one of the hospitals, and he was with Munshi Maharishi. And he left all of that because he was doing, you know, bigger than all of those things. By being with the Maharishi, at one point, he began to slow him down. And so he left and got on his own. And he charged $700, $800, some of this stuff. I want to mention the money factor because I'm showing you how people are buying, you know, buying into it. You know, Pansy Sima. This lady here also, she's big. Mary Ann Williamson. She does this, you know, she does an interesting book on love, loving relationships. I think that's the book that Oprah Winfrey may have given to the Queen of England. Oprah is very interested in these alternative things. Not just the, you know, phantasmagoria of the psychic, but she's interested in alternative considerations. If we're able to get on her show, we will affect her life as well as we'll have a big effect, you know, with tens of thousands of people. Now, a couple of the books I'm going to pass around. Of course, of all the guys, he's the biggest in leadership. This is Stephen Covey, which has become almost like a contamination for devotees. Because there's some devotees are just going to his courses and his workshops and everything, and apparently they're, you know, using him as an authority over some of the spiritual principles. But he presents some functional things that are healthy, can be used, you know, in being able to organize your life and organize your business, etc. He gets $40,000. Can you believe that? He gets $40,000 for some of his presentations, you know. He's called in by the World Bank, he's called in by heads of states, he's called in by the top companies in America and in the world. And he's so much in demand that he gets like $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, you know. And that's just for like, you know, 2 hours, hour and a half of stuff. And his people, he has big, you know, booklets of course material, and it's like really simple the way it's organized. And it's like a multi-level thing. That you can become a teacher, you get trained, you pay $1,000-something, I think it's $1,500, $1,700, and then you get permission to train up others. And everybody you train, they have to pay like $300-$400, you know, to be a part, you know, of your downline. It just goes on and on. I mean, it's just completely phenomenal. So he has this book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, and it's been a huge, huge bestseller. I mean, it's such that anybody who's seriously into management in the mature world, they have to read this because everyone has been talking about it. So many people just had to read it just because they want to be relevant. There's this other thing, principle-centered leadership. And it's doing out first things first. And he touches upon some basic principles, you know, it's kind of similar to Bhagavad Gita also. But he has thousands of people, well, hundreds of people directly connected with him who are full-time now. They've left other kind of occupations, and full-time, and they're making more money and traveling more places and helping more people doing this kind of thing, you know, than they were in other areas. These are two other ones I'll show. This is a higher standard of leadership. This book is written by an economist, also to become very popular in the area, who is looking at Gandhi's life and uses a few takeoffs from the Vedas to show what a proper leader is and how such leader, you know, can affect the community. Now this one here is really amazing. Here's a guy who was very successful in the business world as a consultant, made millions of dollars for people, Later in his life, he gets really, you know, really connected with Sai Baba. And what he's doing, you know, he's helping people who have similar problems like him. He's materially successful, but empty. And so he writes this book called Reawakening the Spirit and Work. And so much of it is based on, and it's called The Power of Dharmic Management. And here the guy who wrote the co-author of The 1 Minute Lucy Manager, very popular book, is writing, you know, recommendation for it. And he has, again, you know, top CEOs and very, you know, orthodox companies who are into it. And there's so much stuff in here that's directly spiritual. And there, I mean, even at the end has a whole chapter on Sai Baba. So he's not intimidated. He's wealthy. He's a million, multi-millionaire. He's made millions for others. And so because he's good at what he does, then he's writing. It's showing, okay, now there's a deeper side to that. There's a deeper side to life. And that's a spiritual connection. And this book is, you know, being highly respected. He has a chapter and he has an appendix, a glimpse into the Sai Satyababa in Sipalamana. So if you do something good, you don't have to be too shy that you are spiritual or that you've gotten it from a spiritual source. Matter of fact, that's becoming a sense of fascination between Krishna consciousness, rather than people trying to leave Krishna consciousness or minimize Krishna consciousness and trying to get this stuff. Because things are moving more and more in a spiritual direction, as it's moving more through metaphysics and looking at what works. So they're seeing that it makes money and it works to have, you know, stress management courses, to teach people, you know, biofeedback. That it works to have facilitators dealing with conflict resolution. It produces results, it brings money, etc. You see this reawakening the spirit in work. The Gandhi book. One or two last things. Maybe I won't talk about these, but I'll just show you. This I gave someone the last few days, maybe it was Jambavati or Jagannath. I gave you Jambavati here? Oh yeah. I gave you a piece of a newspaper about visionary leadership. Was that you? Jagannath, I gave you a piece of TV. Mm-hmm. Okay, give that to somebody to research. Yeah, you can get a book to them.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, it was you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I keep getting you sharper.
You want to get your books to these people?
Yeah. You met them. Yeah.
Yeah,
you met them, isn't it?
Yeah.
Matter of fact, this is your book.
Yeah.
That you passed on to me. Spiritual Politics. Changing the world from inside out. Mm-hmm. So they formed, you know, this organization called Visionary Leadership. And it's here in Washington.
Right.
And it's so much based on the idea of spiritual leadership. This book is in a lot of the magazines now. This book is being appreciated, you know, by people who are trying to look at creating a better world. This one is written by a devotee, Peter Burwash. He's one of the top tennis players in the world. And he has the top training tennis organization in the world. He met Srila Prabhupada many years ago. He never took initiation. But he chants his rounds and follows all the principles. He's writing books on his vegetarianism. As a matter of fact, in South Africa, he and Steve Covey, you know, worked together to do a workshop. And it was rated, and he got a higher rating even more than Steve Covey. He has this book called Who Cares? Wake Up Call. And he does this pretty much similar, based on the 26 principles of a devotee. He does it surreptitiously. But he writes on such areas.
I have one or two tapes of him doing workshops.
Yeah, so okay. Audio or video?
Video.
So we have that in our collection. Yeah, he's a devotee. He's actually, he follows all the principles. And he lives in Hawaii, goes to Hawaii Temple. But he travels He sent us his schedule last time we talked to GBC man. Mm-hmm. He travels, I think he said 320 days of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Just in and out, you know, giving motivational talks, you know. And, you know, he's in demand because, you know, this is the cutting edge stuff. And he relates his whole strength to based on Krishna consciousness. We don't talk about him much in the public because, you know, we don't want to hurt his job, his profession. But he's highly respected. He goes in and out of all these circles and giving these workshops, these lectures. And then the last two here, this is a call for service. It's talking about leadership based on service attitude. This one is From Chaos to Confidence, Survival Strategies for the New World. And there are all these, looking at alternatives, looking at leadership and management from being more humanitarian and also being, was he spiritual? Especially that one, Reawakening Spirituality and Work. And there was a program on TV about that, bringing spirituality into the workplace. I saw this before I went to Detroit, I'm sorry, to Denver. And these sort of things we're talking about. And it was a guy from the UN, I'm sorry, from the World Bank, was saying why there's a need for spirituality in the workplace and how he had involved his co-workers in spirituality. And they were saying, not religion, it's spirituality. He says, they're coming together and they're discussing about, you know, they were engaged in meditations and they were, you know, looking at whatever problems they had, trying to address it, you know, from a spiritual perspective. And they were showing how their, you know, their work output, you know, had actually increased, how they were in better health, there was less, less personality problems, you know, on the job force, etc. And then there's a book from the top Indian school of management, which talks about management, see, by values, towards culture and congruence. And he just uses completely Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana, Upanishads, and is speaking to, you know, the top managers, based on these principles. We'll pass those last ones around. Yeah, but the main thing is just, this last one is interesting, you know, for the yuppies. Because some people are very concerned now about which companies are doing which thing, and they want to know. Because they want to buy in and use products, that are humanly friendly or ecologically friendly. Here's a book called The Best 75 Business Practices for Socially Responsible Companies. And this is becoming more in vogue now. People who are thinking about the future of the planet, they want to know what things are in the products they're using, what are the policies of the company, and what kind of, you know, which all these things affect, you know, management and leadership. So, being mode of goodness is becoming a fad, so to speak. Understanding more about metaphysical and psychic things is becoming something for people who are in the know to investigate. And so much self-help, human potential things is, you know, really the popular things that's going on now. What is that lady who is a movie star? Sherman Klein, right. Her enterprise also, you know. She's very sought after. And, you know, she makes millions of dollars from this stuff. If you hear some of these people, you'll see that they're not really saying much. They don't have the depth that you have, with the knowledge you have of the philosophy. If you just take some area, become a little expert in that, it could be, you know, very, very powerful. You know, listening to some of them, you know, to kind of learn your jargon. Mr. Roy, you can pass it around. In some cases, it means learning some of that jargon, but one doesn't have to get so caught up in it. Now, I'm also not trying to encourage that everybody starts watching television so that we can see the sightings and unsolved these mysteries and this UFO program, any UFO program. Because the TV is so strange, and many of you know this, as you're becoming spiritual. Once you turn it on, time goes. And you wasted so much time. It's like hypnotic. So the best thing to do is that if you are going to be looking at certain kinds of things, Just know when it comes on, or have a TV guy and know exactly what you want. Look at that and turn the thing off. Otherwise, what will happen, you'll be flashing station to station. Before you know it, you look at this thing, that thing, or you finish this thing and you go, and you get 3 hours behind and work you have to do. I mean, it has that kind of effect. So when you, but at the same time, it's so much information is there. So just kind of know what you want out of that and get what you want, you know, rather than letting it, you know, control you. You know, there are certain, you know, programs that are very educational with keeping you aware of what's happening, you know, like this 2020 and 60 Minutes. I mean, these things are always exposing something, revealing very interesting things that, you know, that are educational, help you to know about the times also. But the tendency is that once you get locked in, then you're just fine. So much time is wasted. And you look and you think, well, what can I do with this? I spent 2 hours, an hour to get at this thing. It's wasted my time, etc. But this is what's happening now. There's so much involvement and study. You talk about UFOs, extraterrestrials, and now from the scientific community, what does that mean about life itself? So many people involved now in the self-help scheme. People want to know how to change their life, how to improve on this, improve on that. And then so much, you know, recognition about the crisis in leadership, the failure in leadership. And last, so much in relationship to business. Because there are certain people who realize, and I mentioned this before, that one of the major ways of changing the world is going to be through the business sector. Because in business cuts through politics, it cuts through race, it cuts through all kinds of things. Because it's talking about, you know, money. And because now with so much technology, much communication, the multinational businesses more and more set the pattern based on how people live, how they think, what they aspire for, because they, you know, they create certain things and engender a particular interest. So some thinkers then are realizing, and this is no accident, why some of these kind of leadership books are coming out for people in the corporate business worlds, because it's a direct way of trying to reach some people to affect them, to then to, you know, be able to raise and see consciousness. See. So I think we've sent around enough stuff, you know, get the idea. This is the Nordic Society, it'll pass it also. That's a society that the astronaut Edgar Mitchell, when he went to the moon and had all these metaphysical experiences, then he started a society called the Nordic Society. And this is full of very orthodox scientists and thinkers who now have shifted into looking at the idea of a global mind shift, a global mind change. And they are also very interested in the conferences that they hold, the workshops, the kind of books that they constantly, you know, bring to your attention. It helps you to realize what time of the day it is, or what level, or what kind of people beginning, you know, to think about these sort of things. It's becoming very, you know, very, very much involved. So from the letters we're getting, the responses that's coming in from the things that we're setting up, that we want to really capitalize on this. So I'm glad to see that some of the devotees are taking some books, some, you know, bookshops. When the devotees are reading the books themselves, want to see how we can get the books in the hands of people who can be able to use it to, of course, change their own lives, but you know, change the lives of others. I'm just arranging last night, sending books to two of my contacts at the United Nations in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. I've asked, you know, one of them, well, both of them actually, to, you know, do reviews on the subject matter, because after we have this first printing over, and it won't be long before that, then we have the second printing. Then we want to have a nice list of established people who've read the book and who have, you know, comments, you see, about that. And then by that time we should be pretty much a little clear about the kind of workshops and things that we can be able to offer. And we can later have someone who has time and a strong voice to do the book on tape. One or two of the books that I just passed around that they have in audio, as well as they have these videos to go along with it. And you have mentioned that one has a video for $700. It's, you know, 22-minute video. It summarizes some of the points from the book. Any questions about?
One of the things I put on myself is never making money off Srila Prabhupada's teachings or your teachings. Now, are we going to go in a different direction? Do you want us to develop workshops specifically to give knowledge and make money?
Definitely. Do all those things. In other words, many of you are being slowed down in your preaching because you have to lock yourself in to somebody else's arrangement for making money.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that, you know, there's so much powerful hours that, you know, you can't do service, or you can't preach. So the idea is trying to gradually set up an arrangement where your preaching, you know, sustains you in all areas. Preaching gives you more chance to preach more by being able to give some compensation, you know, for the preaching. And because there are some of these things that people will not even take as serious if it's free. And so we take advantage of that, of course, we align ourselves with that. But the main thing is how we can preach more. Not the money, but how we can preach more.
Right.
So we can preach more if we don't have to worry about maintenance. We can preach more if we have more chance to move around into different environments. And we have also facility, you know, to be able to do that. So like now, for instance, anybody who finds a conference that they can attend and give a paper, or a workshop, or a conference where they can give a workshop, if they have any difficulty in terms of transportation or whatever, then we'll help to cover that. And so we get started so that if an opportunity is there and somebody wants to take advantage of it, then they can be able to take advantage of that. We have, from the Harinam Press, we have to, you know, to pay back for the loans. We have to get money to be able to, you know, to print again. But as we do all of these things in preaching, it will bring in, it will reach more people, and it also bring in more money. So, from the press, it's like some of these things, they let you know ahead of time. If you're interested in presenting something, you contact them. In some cases, you have to travel. You travel to Chicago, you have to travel to, you know, Los Angeles or whatnot. So if anybody, any devotees are able to go to some of these and to do an actual workshop, a seminar, give a presentation, then we'll arrange from Harinam Press for their transportation.
Okay. The other thing I was going to, that we're talking about for our preaching center is to, you know, Kendra and I have already laid the blueprint for this transformation course. The other center, you know, IAS is successful because they have one course that's really a moneymaker.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's a 6-month course, and they're giving that over and over and over and over again. So I guess the question I have is, one of the issues that's come up is how much to charge. My recommendation to Kendra was, but I think this needs to be discussed and brought out, is a sliding scale, maybe for people who don't have the money. Either they can perform service, or we can reduce the rate. But still, what you said is true. I've been to a number of workshops where they said the reason that they're charging is because people don't take it seriously. Americans, I mean, Maharishi was talking about that 20 years ago. He said Americans don't value it unless you put a dollar value on it.
Right. Right.
And so are we going to charge $25 again, or are we going to charge $200?
Let me explain how this is organic. You can charge $5 and get almost, you know, nobody.
True.
If you're not known, and if people don't appreciate what you have.
Right.
So the reason I wanted some of you to go out and try to study some of the conferences, participate in some of them, is first to capitalize on audiences that are already there. The reason why I was talking to Soda about when we start sending the books, you see, for reviews and other things. We want to get the message out, or the institute out, or the book out. And then when we start selling ourselves, selling programs, then people will come, and they will pay. And we'll make it cheap enough where that can pay, you know, I mean, so that many people can come, you have a sliding scale. But then you can have more people, a lot of people coming, and you can also charge substantially, because then you're known or your message has importance. Otherwise, you can charge a dollar, and you may get 15, 5 people, because they haven't taken the message as very relevant. So the charging is kind of secondary to first getting established. Then once you're established, then you can do things and you see around you. So it's like we're looking now ahead of the future, that we want to ultimately have our own, where we have our own courses, we can fully regulate what goes on, and we can cultivate people very, very intensely. And we may start that on a small scale now. But as we get out there in the media, as we get out in more relevant situations, as some of you start interacting with some of the people who are on the circuit doing these things, then in planning sessions, when you have these convention conferences, you always be considered, to be considered, to be able to put people into the slots. If some of these have thousands of people coming, then you can, we capitalize off the audiences that are already there. It's like, in the case of the vendors. So because the vendors want to go where there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of action. Because they know just by the fact that there'll be a lot of people, then they're going to also sell things because people are just going to be constantly coming. So where there is these kind of people giving workshops, when we get in, then some people, they're just going to look at the list of what's available and they're just going to go to different places. Because they're already there. They've been drawn, by some of these people.
I noticed that we had put a sign-up list for the classes that we're going to offer, because there are people who are calling and we suggested an interest. So I
think we should go ahead and start that. This will be quality, connections, even though it'll be a few people who will be coming. We're going to start that. At the same time, it's like the book team, they go full speed ahead on what they're doing. And this will gradually start drawing us to various connections.
Okay, for these classes, are we going to charge or ask for donation?
You have to decide that amongst yourself. Think about that.
Okay.
What we're seeing, more feasible. The idea is now is with these classes, you reach people who are genuinely interested and try to see how to bring them within our greater family.
I also have another personal question. I teach this meditation. It's based on what I learned at TM, but I'm using Radha Govinda, and I'm giving Prabhupada's philosophy, and it's been very successful. But it's not chanting.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a part of me that feels kind of funny about that. Should I view that as a step toward their involvement in bhakti?
You can. I mean, just keep in mind, what I did at the psychic fair.
Yeah.
All right? We set up a stage where people could come, interact, get what they wanted. Some people only came for a tarot card reading, and they left, and they didn't come back. No problem. Some people, there were some people who came in, who one lady I heard, she only wanted prasad. She only wanted something to eat. She came, she got something to eat, and she left. The others who came in, who knew some of those, some of the readers or whatnot, or knew some of the people, and they only wanted to see that particular person. There were some who didn't know what they wanted. They just had an idea something was going on, and they came. And they stayed for some time. Others who came in the morning or afternoon, and they came back, in the evening. Some people only, wanted the music. And they came and they had, participated in something. But those who wanted a chance to have a philosophy, then some opportunity was there. So, I think in terms of that way, that we set up a situation that's definitely bridge, but we still try to get as much through as possible. I mean, basically, some people, may have been a little offended if they were just too much into only the metaphysical, but of course that spoke very straightforward. But at the same time, it was relevant, but it didn't compromise in any way, Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, I didn't force anybody to feel that they had to be a Hare Krishna devotee, or they had to be a devotee, or that they had to change their life. I'm just presenting basic things. So gradually, we can be able to present something of health or of piety or metaphysical nature, and we present that as a way to help them to understand Krishna. Now, how much of Krishna they want, that's up to them. We're ready to make it available. We tease them with it. We make it available. Let me see how much. As we do these things, you'll gradually find more ways how to preach, but not to offend.
Right.
But to preach. You know. And you're already doing that, but you'll gradually find, you know, more ways. I said people will be coming to that course for meditation.
Right.
And in most cases, silent meditation.
Right.
So therefore you reach them from that level and help them to understand.
Right.
And what you can do is along with the actual seminar or workshop, you can also, as you've explained that to them, you can also help them to understand something about audio. About the actual loud chanting, you know, the mantra.
But it came out in our workshop. So
right.
I was able to make the distinction between
exactly.
A passive and quiet meditation. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But in everybody's mind, they should really be aware that the more we can give them Krishna consciousness, the more potent it is. But if it comes in a way that people are uncomfortable with, there won't be communication. And you won't be able to get through. So it's it really comes down to each of us feeling more comfortable with Krishna consciousness ourselves. Being a little more sensitive to what people are, where they're at, and then being able to see, you know, how to make the connection. And that'll be creative and also exciting, because it's really being more personal with where people are at and what they're doing, and being more intoxicated with what you do have, and wanting to see some way how to be able to connect it, how to share it.
There's a man that I taught who's high level, international businessman. Mm-hmm. I may have mentioned him to you.
Okay.
He's a mystic. And I taught him this Radha Govinda meditation. And the last time we got together, he was telling me about his experiences of actually going into other universes,
mm-hmm.
subtle
mm-hmm.
universes, seeing other planets and traveling to other beings.
Mm-hmm.
But he's offered to be kind of like my counselor, for lack of a better word,
mm-hmm.
to develop ways that we can approach the business community. So the wonderful thing I'm thinking about that is that there are so many people in businesses who
mm-hmm.
are yearning for the deeper knowledge and can make, you know, take a meditation like that and all of a sudden open a doorway. I haven't followed up with them. I'm going to now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd like to develop a thing for, you know, top level business.
Right.
But
that's a good point.
Again, the thing that's held me back is always in the past we've never really
mm-hmm.
gone to make money.
Right.
With the knowledge. But I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm happy about it.
Right. And to do that, it has to be, you know, packaged.
Yeah.
Where it can be effective. And even now, I mean, in no way should our main priority be money.
Right.
But it should be that. We want to reach people.
Right.
And we want to do it powerfully. In order to do that, we have to be able to cover expenses.
Right.
We have to be cover maintenance, so we have more time to do it.
Right.
And then it rolls, it turns off.
So the prayer should still be just preaching.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Preach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just that what we're looking at is that there is money in preaching. Now, once you begin to think money first, especially when you're dealing with transcendental things, you know, these New Ages, they can do it because, you know, they're not actually trying to deal with God. They're dealing with, you know, dabbling with, you know, Krishna's energies. But once you're trying to deal with Krishna, and if money becomes a factor, you can try this and try that, and it just won't seem to happen.
The other thought I had on these workshops, because Vera had asked me to kind of be coordinator to the workshop development program, and I've accepted. I'm really happy about it. Kendra and I are going to work on that. But I was trying to think of the theme that people are covering, but they're not covering.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that we have is God, and we know that God is the purpose of our life is to reconnect. And I was thinking that God in the workplace is a good theme. How we package it and introduce it,
mm-hmm.
I think. The idea is God is already there. And people are already thinking about God, but they're just not talking about it in a workplace.
Right.
So how to help people connect with that reality and see for themselves how progressive that is is a kind of the thing that I would like to start as a focus for the workshops in business. So somehow we can do that. I'm working with a team to do that.
I have a few right-brain questions.
Okay.
In terms of timing, because there's a lot going on, we're talking about developmental workshops, we're talking about offering courses, we're talking about the book promotion, and we're talking about transitions being made and services to be covered and all those things. So in terms of the classes and the workshops and actually just getting focused on moving into that phase, my recommendation was that we look at the fall, but perhaps we can start a registration process now so that we begin to solidify the mailing list, develop whatever materials we need, flyers, etc., to announce them. Maybe by that time we'll have a place, but that there's some systematic approach to this and there's some structure put in place before we jump out there. And that gives us time to kind of work in other areas that we need to see, you know, what devotees are kept covering, what services, and what resources and time they'll have to move into these other areas. So, you know, everything is working in conjunction with the other, and we don't end up in a crisis mode and, you know, the burnout mode that we've been in. So I didn't know how you felt about that, because I know once we get the instruction, we're moving.
Right. Both things are there. In other words, what I do with these things is I talk about it and I put it in the air. I put it in the ethers for your minds to think about. I put it in the ethers because certain devotees may find more inspiration in operating on something, or as they begin to think about it themselves, then Krishna will reciprocate. Like in somebody's mind, may not begin to think, okay, the Guru mentioned that there's a need that we have a place. And so, by Krishna responding to everyone's desires, because he wants us to serve him more than we want to serve him ourselves. So then from that, then something will come up that we find, oh, somebody's offering us a building. Now, if they offer us a building, then it means that facility is there, and it's a organic indication that we have to move on that. Okay. Now the difficulty is, how do you look at all of this and organize your priorities and get things happening without just simply having so many things to think about and nothing really happens, you know, or nothing gets focused on? That's where all of you are important, or that's where boys like yourself, who are a leader, are important. My duty is to put it out. My duty is to put it out for you, and put it out for those who might help you, the unseen. My duty is to let you know what things we want to see take place. And then, based on your interests, your devotion, your potency, your material competence, then we start tuning in to see, okay, this thing is going to take this amount of manpower simply, and this thing needs to be immediate priority before we can get that one to come about, and that has to be worked out. I know Krishna can do all of these if we are having the level of devotion for it. Now, in most cases, we don't have that level yet, but as we're talking about it, as we're thinking about it, we'll begin to make sacrifices, our time, our mind. You see, even when you are thinking about service of Krishna, that's a form of worship, and it's a yajna, and then it begins to produce results. So all of that's there, but at the same time, the practical considerations is, now, this week and next month, what do we do and what do we want to accomplish? So those kind of things have to be, you know, done. And that's where, like, your community, the building meetings and things like that, that you can, or other organizational meetings, or you can try to tie that down. A lot of it's based on what's available amongst ourselves and what immediate things need to be more available that we can plug into. Then we take that as, okay, it's a sign Krishna's made a place available first, and then that means the priority we have to work on. Now we're getting the books out, okay? So if from this we get a connection to do some kind of workshop, what the conference is already going on, they will understand, okay, now we need two people, one person who can go and do that. This thing is coming this way. We see so many people who we met from the fair writing us, calling us, and they want something right now. Then we have to take that as a priority. Then we say, okay, it's So there's so many people who are ready now, and they want some assistance. They're there, so then we look and see, okay. We're being more direct in this way. We have to move on now.
Yes, we prescribe the Association of Psychologists. They're going to be coming here, and they would like to stretch if you could make an appearance with your book. I would ask to do the press conference secretary for this year. And the Economic Health Counselor in Chicago, they also need some ability to come in here sometime soon for their meeting. Mm-hmm. And it's up to us, the D.C. chapter, to
arrange schedule.
Arrange everything. So if you could, and maybe if you're not available, maybe the two medical people. Dr. Fred Phillips is now the national president.
Okay. Maybe look, Madhava, Lila, and Zigobera, they can talk with you on there.
All right.
And find out. Yeah, just like Murari did a seminar on what smoking and health. What was the title?
Yes, smoking
and health. Smoke, yeah. Okay. Here he's using his knowledge as a doctor, knowledge of health, and I'm sure and hoping that in the process of, as you were dealing with people and helping them, you were helping them to have some spiritual understanding. Mm-hmm. Very good. Anyone?
How do you see this impacting upon the education system in the area? Because those are our next leaders. How can we reach them and reach the administration to turn things around?
It'd be very difficult. Because, as you see from being in that environment, it's like a prison, you know, the way that most of the policies and people are thinking. So in many cases, we have to reach them in spite of the, you know, tight, rigid structures. Because some of these kind of things, it'll be a while before they really be accepted, you know, in the curriculums. But the idea is that the educators and the students and others, they also go out for places to hear things. And therefore, we have to reach them as they make themselves available. Well, we can, if we can offer something, some courses or some discussion that we should try. Maybe from the health perspective, some of the audience can be invited sometimes to give some presentation. Some schools now are, you know, teaching the conflict resolution. And that can come in from some of these angles. Any last question? Yes, can you tell me?
In the psychic field, I think I shared with you, Jagannath and I, we workshop using spiritual and leadership of students. And so, and it worked out nicely because we, you know, we're doing the mindsets, and after people saying, oh, where's that book, we're going to get it, you know, to go get it. So in going to these conferences and things like that, would it be your request that as we go to these conferences, have it be kind of like that Course in Miracles that we take, leadership, spiritual war, seminars on mental relationships, on common relationship, or also present, you know, other workshops, not necessarily target specific to the book. What strategy?
You don't have to target to the book. The book is just to give you some ideas, act as a catalyst. Certain types of workshops can come directly, you know, from the book. But there are other areas that, as you start doing these, then you'll see that it's not as difficult as it seems. It's just a matter of, you know, it's almost like when you give a class, and you first think about it, it seems very, very difficult. Then you realize you just have to look at the verse ahead of time. You do a little research. You get some points to add to speak about a particular verse. As you've done it for a while, you know, it becomes easy. It's like, no one should be, so in any way, confined to just, you know, to come some of the things in the book. But now when you read the book, you'll see that they have a lot of stuff there. Because it's, you know, it's designed to take so many things from our philosophy and to make it available for the things that people are, you know, now experiencing.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question.
That's why I pass around some of these things to show you. It's the kind of workshops and things that people are doing. I mean, some of the stuff is off the top of people's heads. You know. It's even one of the ways that some books about making money will tell you that people are so much into hearing from consultants and hearing from experts. And they'll tell you, but you find something you're interested in and become an expert in it. just, you know, just do a little research, learn about it, and then you go and you explain and teach it. As you teach it, you'll become more of an expert because you'll be learning and getting more finer understanding. Then you become very, very expert at it.
In terms of speaking, in terms of we had a meeting as we discussed how to best use our resources and to do what we're doing in a strategic and targeted way. You had mentioned one time about Shul Prabhupada. I know you're supposed to do everything at once. We need to hit the local levels and the big areas. But you had mentioned one time about Shul Prabhupada saying to kind of aim for the higher levels and then that feeds down. So can you speak?
Yeah, Prabhupada, you know, this is a question that Nandini asked. We always ask Prabhupada like that. Prabhupada gave us so many things to do. And we would just kind of be a little like bewildered. Okay, Prabhupada, what should we do first? Mm-hmm. You know, you want this thing, happen, that thing. You know, Prabhupada, what should we do first? You do it all. And we ask him maybe two, three times, sometimes, like, Prabhupada, did you hear what it said? We were saying, what do you want us to do first? I mean, all of these things, Prabhupada, I mean, tomorrow, what should we actually do? He said, do it all. We realized that he heard us, and he meant what he said. But then other times, in the same spirit, he would say, shoot, you know, for the rhinoceros. In other words, you go for the big thing, biggest thing. And then, if you don't get that, it's not a problem. You get something close. Mm-hmm. And he's distinctly, I mean, this is where I was personally trained by Prabhupada this way, when we were doing the library work. We didn't have the slightest, you know, clue how we're going to reach all of these universities and professors, Sanskritists and Indologists and comparative, you know, religious scholars. We didn't have the slightest idea, you know, how to break into these people. And we had to do this all around the world, country to country. And so he just told us a simple thing. We were having a little meeting with him in Chicago, about 7 or 8 of us. And he said it was material, but it was spiritual. He said, you go to the most important people, or you go to the most important library, most important school, you get them to take an order. And then you have a copy or you keep that order. You go to other places, you explain something to them, and then you show them what the topmost people have thought about, have ordered, what they've done. Simple thing. We sold hundreds of thousands of books based on that. We would go, you know, we find out who are leading persons in some area. We get them to buy a book, to take a book, to order a book, to write a little note, anything. And then we would go to other people who would see these guys as their acharyas, as their authorities. And it would work miracles. My biggest sale was at Brigham Young University. They bought more Bhagavatam sets than any other university in the whole world. I went to the top scholar at Brigham Young, showed him the books. The guy spoke about 40 languages. I mean, he was a genius. He was so much in ecstasy about Prabhupada's Bhagavatam because he felt that it completed his library. He knows the importance of Puranas and the Bhagavad is the most important. The fact that he had this in the Sanskrit and translated to English, he saw it was completely rare. The guy was practically crying. He wanted everything that we had, he ordered. I asked him, you know, if there were other people at the school who he thought I should visit. He gave me a list. I go see people who weren't interested at all. And I told them, but Hugh Leamy told me to come see you. Oh! He knows me? And they would buy. Other people, in the conversation, I would just tell them that, oh yes, and yesterday or this morning I saw, you know, Hugh Leamy and he bought this. And they immediately, what did he get? I want the same thing. Or I would go like, yeah, I went to Harvard, I went to these places. I got the libraries to order the books, right? Then I go, you know, to another Ivy League school. And sometimes they're interested right away, sometimes not. I tell them, well, you know, such and such, and you remember their names. So such and such librarian at Harvard ordered this series. And then sometimes they would literally snatch the order from you. We have a better library than them. I want two sets of these. it would be amazing, you know. We have more endowment. We, you know, just 2 minutes before that, they would not be so interested, you know. Because people are very much affected with it's just that's why your shirts, the Institute shirts, are so nice. The verse from Bhagavad Gita: what leaders do, others will definitely follow. So when something becomes accepted by high circles, because even though they're not into parampara, but they understand that leaders of a field, when they take it as important, you know, then others do, in essence. I mean, that's why it's good, you know, which, and that's why I'm really hoping that at some point, and we will, I'm hoping that it speeds up, that we get a national talk show. You know, Geraldo, Oprah Winfrey, one of those guys. Once we get one of those guys, watch and see what happens. To the degree that people start calling us, or we appear, or we have a chance, how much then it becomes, you know, more accepted. So that was the idea, the spiritual idea. You reach, it just means the importance of role model, importance of acharya, importance of those who are here. And we went from school to school, country to country, because, you know, they know each other. Sometimes we would even just meet a big guy and just give him free the Bhagavad Gita. And have him to write maybe just a little note. And the miracles we can perform with that note. And you won't even believe it. Because it'll be understood as the authority, you know, in the area. And that would make a huge difference. So you reach a few people. Just like, I mean, this spiritual warrior book. Once it gets out and people see that Gordon Michael Scallion has written something on the back, there will be so many people who will buy that book just because Gordon Michael Scallion, you know, has given approval. Watch, just you know, once it gets out, enough people to know about it. Or if it was in, you know, one of the leading, you know, journals, and it has that, you know, Gordon Michael Scallion. Because there's hundreds of thousands of people who are attentive to him, and they see, they respect. And if you think about it, you know, you kind of do that yourself. If there's someone who you feel a little comfortable with, then the things they say, you take notice. In this. So that's why it makes it a little awkward that while we're trying to kind of get something together, we're also talking about a bigger level, because a bigger level also will help us to get many things together as we still try to get the foundation together. We have to work on that too also. But the bigger things, they will set, you know, many things in place. This one.